Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock in the UK on Tuesday, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you for all the Star Wars fans out there. But beware of the Revenge of the 5th. So, and with that, that's enough really, really bad jokes. So my guest this week on What Comes Next is Mike Akin. And we've moved out of the Zoom office attire, which for both of us normally involves comfortable sweaters, and we're wearing collared shirts and look as smart as we can be. Although I'm the Caymanian and Mike is in the Caribbean, it would appear. So anyway, Mike Akin is the president, chairman, head honcho of Magus Wealth. And one of the things that we're both passionate about is supporting people around their wealth, looking after themselves, their family, and much more. And so Mike and I both connected through himself as a client and me as a coach with the Sherlaw's organization for years, but we never really got to know each other until recently, and I've really enjoyed it. So I felt to invite Mike onto the show, and to hear his thoughts around where he is now, where the world is now, and what comes next. I know you've got some thoughts in mind, and as always with my guests, the floor is yours, Mr. Akin.
Thank you, Tom. Yes, I was wondering who would get the Star Wars one in first, but you beat me to it.
Okay.
I think thank you very much for having me on the to have this conversation. I was looking at this, at the caliber of guests that you've had to date, and the breadth of topics, and it's an impressive array. So somewhat intimidated by all of that. I'll see if I can pull it out of the bag. I think maybe just sort of a quick one about sort of me, and just in terms of, you know, you said I set up Magus, almost 23 years ago, which just seems like a long time ago. We're wealth managers, financial advisors, and yes, so the wealth management space is very much where we reside. And I think from my point of view, you know, you said it is what's comes next, but with a sort of maybe a sort of a context around leadership and how you sort of how I see that, or how we've woven that into sort of the fabric of Magus. So I think that's probably what I'd like to cover. I think it's a rarity, isn't it, to actually be given the space, the platform to actually articulate verbally what goes on in your head. I take the dogs out for walks. You and I are great advocates of walking and thinking. And I'm sure my dogs think I'm completely mad, because we were sort of over the weekend just having long conversations about, you know, what I should be talking about and what I eventually will. But I think sort of what comes next for me, I think I would probably like to use Magus, if I may, because it's something that's very close to my heart, and I know it probably better than anything else. And it's really sort of to put it into context of maybe sort of where we are, but with a little bit of a story, backstory of how we got to where we are now, but more about where we're going in the future. There are a lot of learnings, a lot of things I've learned over the years. Certainly leadership is definitely one of those things. So at a high level, there's a high level of context, our business, what drives our business, is in financial services in general within the UK. It's a rapidly moving business that's always evolving over time. You've got sort of regulation, which I think you understand, and sort of technology is being driven, and also some competition from the large tech companies, some DIY financing. So there are a huge amount of pressures on us as a business, and I think you really can't rest on your laurels. Where you've got to, if you blink, somebody would have brought something else out that you then need to some time to catch up with. I think we've always had this idea of being sort of ahead of the game, you know, sort of at the front end of that sort of that wave of sort of innovation. And we we're quite fortunate to be, so we were invited to join a group called GAIA as the Global Association of Independent Advisors of 20 companies or 20 firms like ours. It was ranging from New Zealand to California and everything in the middle, so even in Chile. There are guys out there. And we're able to sort of learn from other countries with different sort of regulatory regimes on where we should be taking the business from a sort of advice perspective, from a compliance perspective, and also from a sort of technology basis. And what we've sort of, you know, it becomes fairly sort of blatantly obvious with all these pressures being sort of coming at us from a whole different sort of different areas. You need to get bigger. You need to scale. It's economically, but also, you know, so you need to be robust for the future. And as we all know, bigger businesses mean more complexity. I think that's where the what comes next piece really sort of starts to kick in. So that's sort of the context of where we are.
Mm-hmm.
And just I suppose this, you know, in terms of pushing the business to the next level. If you've come across this phrase, this of taking it through the desert, have you heard that phrase? Business gets to a certain level and it seems to sort of just to plateau out.
Yeah.
And trying to just keep on pushing and keep on pushing. I was at a sort of seminar many years ago. This guy was talking about this. I go, now I understand.
Hmm.
You know, these different stages that the businesses go through. And also, it was just recently, actually, somebody said to me, recognizing that what got us here won't get us there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And this was from a large, very, you know, multinational investment manager that we use. And it was just so blatantly obvious that what we were doing was exactly that, recognizing that we couldn't continue the way we were doing. So something had to change. I think this is the component part of what's of central to helping us do this. Have you read the book Traction by Gino Wickman?
Yeah.
So a great book, very simple.
Mm-hmm.
In its overall sort of business management philosophy. However, simple in concept is never simple in implementation.
I have a phrase: it's simple. It doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah. And I think all these sort of phrases come to mind. I remember another client of ours who was running a very sophisticated and large oil service company up in Aberdeen. And he was referring to him restructuring his whole business. He said it was like flying an airplane while rebuilding it.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a phrase from Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn.
Oh, there you go.
Definition of an entrepreneur is somebody who flies a plane while building it.
Yeah, there you go. In that case, that's where it came from. I thought he was the original source.
good artists cheat, great artists steal. Pablo Picasso.
Yeah, indeed. But I think, you know, that's where you are. You've got to continue running the business and functioning and delivering to your clients, looking after your people, and whilst actually just trying to be innovative and bring in a process that will take you to that next, you know, to the next level. I think for me, what I learned from that book, and there were many, many learnings, but there were probably some two things that I really stuck with me is this concept of right person, right seat.
Mm-hmm.
And the other was this, it's a GWC, gets it, wants it, and capacity, to do it. And when we sat down as a management team and sort of looked at who was doing what within the business, mm-hmm. it became so blindly obvious that there were some people who were in the wrong seats doing completely the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
For all best intentions, and me being one of them, probably, and in terms of recognizing that whilst I am the founder, and therefore, when there was nobody else to do the jobs, you had to do them yourselves. Or do them yourself. You've got to be able to sort of pass it on to other people who are considerably better at doing these things than you, and also enjoy them as well, which is
right.
The other thing.
Yeah, I've often, you know, the business I worked in for years, a lot of similar concepts to traction. And I used to talk about the people have to, for right person, right seat, there's going to be about their capacity. Like, do they have the time and time and space to do it? Mm. Their capability. Mm. The other thing is their energy. Yeah. Like, if you're not energized to do something, you know, you can do it year after year. But things flow a lot better if people are actually doing work they're good at, work they've got time for, and work they love.
Yeah.
So that's the, for me, I tend to focus on the, I kind of almost take a lot of these things as givens now, that I like working with companies that kind of get that.
Yeah.
And then, they go, okay, so how are you showing up? And how's the energy in the organization? How do people feel about the work they're doing? Yeah. And because then they're going to step up more, and they're going to go, not just because they're clear on their role, and you've taken the complexity out of a growing organization by making it simple with things like tractions tools. But actually, you know, if people are having fun and loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can't always get everything working, but the more you can get that Venn diagram to work, the better.
Yeah. It's there are the grades of happiness, I guess, within a particular role. But I think what we have found is actually by putting this in place, and I'll go into it a little bit more in a sort of a moment, but actually the energy within the management team, we're all very, very driven now, because we've got this sort of demarcation of roles. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier to actually know where the responsibility sits, and actually, you know, instead of forcing somebody to say, look, this is a job that needs to be done, people are actually going, actually, that's something that I want to do within the context of gets it, wants it, and has the capacity to do it.
Gets it, wants it, has the capacity, and GWC. Yeah. So then for one of my guests relatively recently was a guy called Tom Nixon, who's just published a book. I think the title's broader, but broadly the title is Source. And he's done a lot of work with founders, often in startups. Mm. And he was one himself. And he distinguished between the founder, the chief executive, and the source, which typically is all the same thing at the beginning.
Mm, it is.
But the example he gave was that when he was a founder in a startup himself, he built the company successfully, stepped away from it, and he had to come back in a few years later because it just wasn't working.
Yeah.
But there's always one person who's the source, right? Who, and you know, you know, when you started talking, you said that what Magus is about is you're always looking to be always ahead to take it to the next level. That's one of, it feels like internally, that's one of the source things you do that actually then drives the ultimate outcomes that you're looking for. I guess my question for you is, I wasn't sure how to introduce you because I've spoken to, you know, one of your colleagues, as you know, a fair bit. I'm not actually sure what's the GWC for Mike, and what's your role currently in the business that you founded 23 years ago?
Thank God I was listening when we were coming up with this, when we were dividing up the roles. It does come back to the source, actually, very much so. So one of the roles within the business is this idea. I mean, I always think it's slightly grand, but it's this of the visionary role.
Mm-hmm.
I have it on my computer, because it just to remind me so that I make sure that and this isn't for this talk. It's actually there continuously. Yeah. And it's all about culture, ideas. I can read it. Culture's idea, direction, relationships, and energy.
Right.
And that's, so I have that part, which sort of sits, I don't like hierarchical, but if you imagine it, it sort of sits at the top, and then that sort of drives the business forward.
It's at language you'd be very familiar with from past colleagues. It's at a higher level of context.
Yeah.
Everything will naturally sit underneath it. If you get those things right, can you repeat them for me?
Yeah, culture, ideas, direction, relationships, and energy.
Yeah.
So those are my mantras, you know?
And to me, that's pretty much the perfect definition of a chief executive officer. which is interesting because, you know, you and I are both old enough to remember when that role in Britain used to always be called managing director.
Yes.
Right. And now we have a distinction between a CEO and many other C's, including a COO, chief operating officer, chief commercial officer, chief investment officer in the fields related to what you do, or chief information officer or innovation officer, or CIOs. Mm. But the MD currently is much more, I'm stating the obvious for you, but for the audience, MD in other, for other countries maybe listening, an MD is like a COO. They make things happen. Yeah. But my even more concise definition of a CEO job description is keeper of the vision. Mm. And starting with vision, ideas, energy, culture. What's that like for you to not have responsibilities and roles in the day-to-day of the business?
If that was completely the case, then it'd be absolutely brilliant. But there is an element of still needing to get my hands dirty, roll up my sleeves, because we're of a size where I have two functions. There's the visionary and there's the growth of the business, which and I'm still client facing, which is something that I love. But I think what it did do was when I sometimes when you are pondering. So almost doing some bit of navel gazing about where we need to take the business. Mm-hmm. And you're not actually doing something. You're not physically, writing a report, or you're not seeing a client, but you're gazing out into space. You actually are doing something. And I think it just gives you that, it gives you permission to go and have conversations with some of the other members of Gaia around the world, and go on to sort of these study tours to understand what's going on, because it's research. And for every sort of 10 ideas that you might be exposed to that you come up with, maybe one will be something that can actually be turned into something of benefit to the business. So it just gives me not carte blanche to be sit here and do absolutely nothing, but it certainly gives you a refresh. It certainly energized me when I was able. I was almost as if the board was basically said, look, this is your role. This is what you do. I didn't necessarily realize it at the time. But speaking with you now, the idea of when I set Magus up was all to be different, deliver more to our clients. And that actually has been, and that was what I said all those years ago. And that's still now, and it's still relevant, actually. Mm-hmm. Which is quite nice to see, actually. Quite nice to hear. And it's nice to hear me say it as well.
And that's out there in the ether.
Forever
and a day.
Yeah.
So I know you had a series of things you wanted to talk about, and I just said to you, we're here to have a conversation. So a conversation sometimes means I'm going to ask you questions I'm interested in. I've just done it.
That's fine. Any more questions?
Well, I mean, I guess the question for me, it doesn't feel like I'm shoehorning it in, but the show title is What Comes Next. So you've had this transition, you've introduced this methodology, and it actually feels like your role had already moved into that space to a large extent anyway. But when the board told you this is what you're already doing, you have a board of directors, right? I mean, for clarity, if I remember you're right, your business is less than 50 people, right? Yep. So it's just for listeners to get an idea of scale. But how many businesses less than 50 people, whether or not they've been in business 23 years, have a founder / chief executive who isn't executing, but is actually doing the high value work, if you will, at a high level of context, has a board of directors telling him this is what you're already doing, and we want to define this and actually say this is your role. Yep. And if you've got that in place, and you now have a leadership team who are energized by having clarity of their roles and responsibilities, that feels like, for however long that's been in place, it certainly wasn't, from the sound of things, for 23 years. No. So, and if it's there now and you're looking to always deliver more, you can always, I guess my question would be, what comes next? And it could be more, it could be in a specific space, or it could be, looking at all those changes around technology, around, we don't need to get too geeky about this for a general audience, but around active versus passive investing, and Vanguard coming in and offering stuff, which is not more. It's the absolute basics for a low price, right? And they know what they do, and they're the Walmart of financial advice, right?
They have their place.
They have their place. And so that's, you know, that's one of the changes come to the industry. And if people who were in that space weren't looking at it, they'll get run over. But what does deliver more look like? You know, it's two ways to go. What's next for the leadership of Magus, or what does deliver more look like for the people who, benefit from your services?
Okay. I think there are probably, so there's the advice piece, but I mean, maybe if we look at sort of structurally what we, so where we're taking from our people, you know, we're a people business. And you've got to recognize this, the capabilities of us as a business going forward in terms of what we want. If you want to be the architect of your own future, you've got to sort of start sort of today. And so why don't it, you know, we've set up an academy, which is starting to grow our own people. And again, that has been in existence for a number of years, but it's actually recognizing how significant that is going forward. And you know, whilst, you know, it has been in place, it's something of major significance going forward, and will take resource to get that. So, you know, that's what's next in terms of becoming a sort of a fully fledged, not quite a university, but, you know, setting up something that stands as a feeder into Magus, and a sort of a sense of level of professionalism. So technology, I mean, all these things we've been working on for years. So it feels like they're just coming to fruition now. But we've just set up we've got our own platform, which is now starting to deliver that level of vertical integration. So again, to avoid getting too geeky, but it really does sort of speed up that process and is going to be getting more. But I think where, from an advice perspective, there are some two things that really stand out, I think, in my mind. One is we've got to be living at the back of a cave or under a rock to not recognize that there's a certain thing going on in climate change and all that. And there's a big push now from us of they call it ESG. I don't know if you've come across this, of environmental, social and governance investing. Or sustainability, if you want to give it a single word. And that is really going to be a major driver going forward. It's not new in terms of it has been around for many, many years, but I think the awareness of the investing client to the level of due diligence investment managers do on the companies that they ultimately, you know, the clients are ultimately investing in, it's going to be very, very important. We do client surveys every year. We ask our clients a number of questions, and some of them are quite pointed, but one of them was about ESG. And we got, there was a response, it was huge. It was probably 80-85% of clients either said they wanted specifically to invest in that way or have a portfolio that was more sustainable, or people wanted to find out more. I think that, and that's now starting to be almost of central to one of our conversations that we have with our clients. And that really is good. And that's going to have it'll have a slow impact, but actually, the impact of capitalism, actually invariably has a long term, sort of stability also, long term stare in terms of its effect. Well, I think from an advice perspective, it's interesting, you know, historically, I was on a talk, a guy, I don't know if you've read, I'm just trying to think of his name, Brian Portney, have you read, The Geometry of Wealth? It's a good book, but he was saying that actually he was sort of talking about sort of the change of, delivery of advice, to clients. And if you, so historically, if you go back, so you start off with platforms where there's this, you know, the technology piece, then planning software. So this is all the advent of computers and technology, the simplification of portfolios and all that sort of stuff. And this is all delivery to the client to make life easy for them. But the advice piece actually is also changing. there's a huge transfer of wealth globally. It's something in the order of sort of £2 trillion worth of wealth that will be transferred from one generation to the baby boomers across to the next generation. And the majority of these children, so the rising generation, they're not prepared to receive significant amounts of wealth. And I think what's going to happen, or what needs to happen, and what I'm doing a lot of, and you and I have spoken about this in the past, is that there's a need to change the level of sophistication that is given to clients. So you've gone from this of telling, advising, and it's now going moving in probably to the pinnacle of what advice should be, which is coaching. So you're actually coaching clients to make themselves, help them feel comfortable with the wealth that they've got so that they can actually empower the next generation so that that wealth isn't lost through misspent youth and inappropriate spending. I think ultimately that's where financial planning needs to go. And it was very interesting that this guy, Brian Portney, sort of said exactly that same, sort of the same things. He was preaching to the converted, but it was rather nice to have it confirmed by a third party.
There's a couple of things that occurred to me from that. And one is, and I'll say them both consecutively and then you can ask your thoughts. And one is around the ESG piece and where, to what level is it important to lead or to follow? And 2 years ago, I was asked to go meet in London at one of the offices of one of the world's biggest financial institutions, and they had their funds brochure sitting in the reception while I was waiting. Yep. And inside it said, our clients tell us we need to rank things by ESG. So they're following the client, they're following the market rather than leading. But sometimes if you're an expert, it's quite important to give people a heads up and lead them, would be my thought. The second thought would be, just for repetition, just to get it into my head, you've got that note on your computer about the areas that you're responsible for. Just read them off for me again.
So culture, ideas, direction, relationships, and energy.
Basically what the patriarch or matriarch of a family looking to transfer wealth needs to focus on for successful transfer of wealth between generations. And none of that has to do with telling them what to do.
None of it was.
I felt it was almost interesting because it's like, it's a capture for me, a bit of a capture as to the role you're playing within your own, to some level as the source in your business. You'll go around and ask questions. What's happening? What are we seeing? And what are you sensing? And, it's fascinating. You call it family stewardship, right?
Yep.
And we've talked quite a bit about that because I've got some experience in the space. And that can be with the extremely wealthy families, and they will need more sophistication, more time. But I think we all need to look at this a little bit. And, any level of transfer of wealth from the quite small to the much larger, the level of, we've talked about this as well without going to names, but, purpose and intention, one of the bigger platforms in the UK, the founder of that, any opportunity on the radio or on the giving a talk, he's going to talk about financial education because people don't have that as well. So I guess, so those are things that occurred to me as to what kind of comes next. There's not really a question in here. I guess I'll just give you a couple of minutes to develop your thoughts and wrap up. I always like to let the guests wrap up. But it's been fascinating just listening to your thoughts as somebody who's put your career into this space,
I think that whole thing about stewardship, when it's an absolutely fascinating subject dealing, because whilst you have I've got probably the best part of 30 years in this business, it's when you're dealing with families, you're not dealing with financial planning. You're dealing with emotion. You're dealing with what happened maybe 30, 20, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And I think it's incredibly important to recognize that it's a human skill, not a sort of a technical skill. Mm-hmm. Technicals help, but actually it's the ability to look at something in a far, in very much a sort of a coaching space. And to that end, I'm putting it out there now. I'm actually writing a book about it.
So I'm
now told you, so hopefully nobody else is listening and we're fine.
Well, I'll make sure to push this out as much as I can on socials, just so that Mike is on the hook.
Yeah. Don't hold your breath. I'm doing it with a friend down in, co-authoring it with a friend down in Australia, so down in Sydney. So.
Well, it's fantastic. I've seen you've shown me your process, which is very well developed, because it does, you know, working with relationships and energy and ideas and vision and culture is very, very important. And it's a lot of the space I work in. And it simply must be accompanied with experience and expertise. In relevant spaces. So it's all good getting a family together and saying, what are you looking for? But they kind of need to know that you actually know, even if you're not going to do it yourself, they need to know, okay, what's that actually going to look like? And how has that worked in your 30 years of experience? So that's, it's cool. So
you give them the tram rails to run in. You give them enough space to work it out for themselves. But you do need to give them a framework, that's for sure.
I like that. Well, it's been, I'll keep it to half an hour. It's been great, listening to your story, and particularly, the fact that you've found it valuable to hear your own voice and say a couple of things out loud. And actually this lovely recognition you had that for 23 years, you've actually been doing what you intended to do at the very beginning. Mm. And you're still doing it. So. I look forward to talking to you further, and working out, as you tell me, how you continue to deliver more.
Look forward to it. Thanks, Tom, for the opportunity.
Pleasure, Mike.
Yeah. Thank you very much.